get some like lubricant to go on there just to make sure that everything works nicely and stuff like that. The ones I bought from a hardware store, $25 for two new taps, and the things work perfect. So, and it's not that expensive to do. If you called a plumber out, you know, $60-$70 an hour you're paying him just to change a tap, something you could do yourself in, you know, 10-15 minutes, and it's not really that hard. So, you know, have a go at it. I might try and get a plumber in just because we haven't had one before, and I think it'd be a good idea. Anyhow, I'm going to close off trade tips right now, but stay tuned for Andrew's show, High Performance, next, and I won't be in next week, and the week after that, I think we're doing a outside broadcast, so stay tuned to Southern FM for that, but I'll be here the week after, so been great joining you. I'll see you in a few weeks, and I hope you pick a winner on Tuesday.
Brighton Veterinary Hospital, 93 Bay Street, Brighton, provides expert care and assistance for all animals needing medical attention. Brighton Veterinary Hospital is proud sponsor of Kaleidoscope on 88.3 Southern FM.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
Yes, Pat Benatar all fired up. This is Andrew Jobling. It's the High Performance Show. It's Saturday, the 31st of October, the last day of another month. Another month gone and a new month about to start. Exciting stuff that is. And welcome, everyone, to the High Performance Show this beautiful, sunny Saturday. And I hope you've had a great week. I've had a fabulous week, and I've done some high performing and tried to inspire some other people to do some high performing. You're listening to this show because you would like, I'm hoping, unless, of course, you just accidentally came across this while you're flicking through the stations, you came across this station and you thought, who's this crazy guy? He sounds like he's on something. Well, yes, I am on something, as a matter of fact. I am high on life. Now, does that sound like a bit of a cliche? Well, maybe so, but who cares? Because it's my show and I can do whatever I want. One thing I don't do, however, is risk my life that often, except, of course, when I go outside and drive my car, and I don't deliberately go out to risk my life. Now, this week on the High Performance Show, however, we have a very special guest, a man who, well, I guess the best way to describe him would be crazy. No, he's not crazy, not in his world, because he's a man who loves nature and loves getting close to nature and at times has pushed the boundary a little bit. So I would love to welcome to the studio this Saturday afternoon, the 31st of October, Mr. Yair Kellner.
Good afternoon, Andrew.
Hello, Yair. How are you?
I'm excellent.
That's good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's good to have you. You're just looking very relaxed and calm. You're not nervous at all. You know, I feel a little bit intimidated by, you know, being involved in this high-powered, high-profile show.
Well, I'm not used to hang around, you know, big stars, but there's well, always a new famous first time, so well, I'm honoured.
Let's hope a little bit rubs off, mate.
And, absolutely.
I'm sure you know you'll benefit from the experience. But however, we're not here to talk about me. In fact, yeah, we're not even here to talk about you, although we will. This is the High Performance Show, and the goal of this show is to share some secrets, because you've done some incredible stuff, and I'm about to just give a little bit of a description of Yair and some of the stuff he's done. Pretty amazing, actually. We've had some great guests on our show, but Yair has done some stuff which I hope, our goal is to inspire the listeners and not necessarily entice them to do what Yair has done, but just to show that what is possible if you've got the right mindset. Yeah,
absolutely.
So Yair, as I said, he's a man who loves nature and does a lot. You'll do a lot of stuff outside in the elements. Yeah,
absolutely.
And
that's my forte,
the elements.
Absolutely.
And we're not talking about the elements of a cold Melbourne winter. I mean, that's really like a warm Bahamas evening for you, really, isn't it? Like,
it's slightly tropical.
Anything above zero is warm in Yair's world, because he does a lot of stuff, a lot of mountain climbing. You do a lot of expeditions. You do a lot of skiing. You've done a lot of bikeling. I was going to say bikeling, but cycling across glaciers and mountains. And we're going to talk about a particular race that you took part in only earlier this year, in May this year, called the Iditarod Invitational, which was a 500-kilometre bike ride across the glaciers and snowfields and up mountains in Alaska.
It is. It's actually around across frozen rivers and lakes and then through the Alaskan range, and it was actually in March this year. Yeah,
I knew it started with an M. So I got one little bit. But there's a amazing story that goes along with that, and we're going to talk more about that. Yair just loves being outside, don't you, mate? You just love being at one with nature and seeing what it can throw at you and seeing if you can overcome it.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say overcome it, but I suppose it's being accepted in some areas that I suppose most people will think about as hostile.
Mm.
And I think about as indifferent, and that indifference actually makes you realize a lot about yourself.
So how did you get started? You know, like, what was the first thing that inspired you to want to get out there and get amongst it like you do?
I started camping with my father when I was about 3 years old, and I just liked it. And as happens generally in life, the more you do things, the more you want to up the ante. So I started to look for more and more, I suppose, challenging stuff, not so much for the challenge, but because the complexity and the interest of how to get to a place and then how to actually navigate through it became part of the interest, as well as getting to know places around the world. So I just looked at the map and thought, well, that looks like a difficult place to get to. So I thought, that sounds
good. I'll go there.
Yep.
And what do you love about it? What keeps you coming back?
I suppose it's because life is stripped down to something very simple, which we don't have anymore in life. I mean, whenever we look around, when we live in sort of our urban areas, there's always things sort of confronting us, assaulting our senses. You know, there's always messages. You look at the bus, there's a message. You kind of stand in the street corner, there's a message. And if you go to more remote areas, then it's a lot more quiet and you can actually hear yourself think to start with. And also, you learn a lot about yourself. So it's not just about the place you go to, but it's about what you learn about yourself.
What have you learned about yourself?
I learned that I have very good forgetfulness habit. And most of the people who do these kind of things forget very quickly how miserable it is. So we then go and do it all over
again. Do it again.
And I suppose it also sometimes makes you think about the fact that if there's a place for smart people like universities and research centers, there must be a place for some stupid people like me, and that's those kind of adventures.
Good, mate, good. Well, you're not stupid at all. We know that because I know, and the how we met was you are actually a lecturer, you're a trainer and a teacher, so I know you're not stupid. But the High Performance Show is all about lessons, so we've got lessons already. That's great. And I think one of the lessons that you shared was to be able to find a place where you can spend some time on your own and enjoy the moment. And because you're right, people, like, how easy is it just to get lost in the noise of the world?
Mm-hmm.
And we're certainly not necessarily saying go to the top of a mountain to find your own space, but somewhere, if you can find a place where you can just stop and smell the roses and enjoy just being you, then that's a good thing
to do. I suppose, Andrew, part of it is having a place where you can sort of reestablish meaning. A lot of people have a lot of things, but they more and more don't have meanings in their lives anymore. And if you go and learn something about yourself or challenge yourself, it also introduces the concept of meaning back into your life. And once it has a meaning, then you also have your motivation.
There you go. More lessons. Thank you. Now, I am currently looking. I've got a copy of the Sunday Herald Sun magazine, and this is dated May 17, so it's a few months ago now. That's where May came from, not March.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it. This is big stuff, mate. The 1, 2, 3, 4, you can hear the pages turning as I, 4 pages, all about this man's struggle. This man's, it's a struggle, but overcoming some incredible obstacles and adversity you overcame. And we're just going to introduce this, then we're going to go to a song, then we're going to come back and talk about it, all right? But as I mentioned earlier, you took part in the Iditarod Invitational, which is, when you think about it, for sort of mere mortals like myself and I guess most of the people that are listening today, the thought of riding a bike 500 kilometres across frozen lakes and glaciers and up mountains and through knee-deep snow in sub-zero temperatures is not something that we'd normally jump at, and it would be something you go, no way known. But it's something that you go, yeah, I'll do it without even thinking about it. Now, and we'll talk more about the race, but you got lost, didn't you, along the way? You took a wrong turn. You ended up falling into a river, a frozen river. You ended up having to survive in down to negative 58 degrees Celsius.
Yep.
For 3-4 days on very little food with wet gear. Like, that is absolutely incredible stuff. And for the fact that you're sitting here today looking, smiling at me like you're doing, and that you're alive, is, you know, the chances of that happening, I would imagine, would be, for majority of people, would be 1 in 1,000, maybe. It's an incredible thing what you've done. And so we're going to look, I can tell everyone, look, this silence, I can hear the silence out there because you want to hear more about this incredible story, and you will, and not just about what Yair did, but the way he was thinking to overcome what he had to overcome is an incredible, incredible story. So please don't go anywhere. And I thought we might just play a quick song, which is sort of appropriate to the story you're about to hear. This is Miley Cyrus with The Climb.
I can almost see it, that dream I'm dreaming, but there's a voice inside my head saying you'll never reach it. Every step I'm taking, every move I make feels lost with no direction. My faith is shaken, but I gotta keep trying, gotta keep my head held high. There's always gonna be another mountain, I'm always gonna wanna make it move. Always gonna be an uphill battle, sometimes I'm gonna have to lose. It ain't about how fast I get there, ain't about what's waiting on the other side. The struggles I'm facing, the chances I'm taking, sometimes might knock me down, but no, I'm not breaking. I may not know it, but these are the moments that I'm gonna remember most, yeah. Just gotta keep going, and I gotta be strong. Just keep pushing on, 'cause there's always gonna be another mountain, I'm always gonna wanna make it move. Always gonna be an uphill battle, and sometimes I'm gonna have to lose. Ain't about how fast I get there, waiting on the other side. It's the climb. There's always gonna be another mountain, I'm always gonna wanna make it move. Always gonna be an uphill battle, sometimes you're gonna have to lose. Ain't about how fast I get there, ain't about what's waiting on the other side.
If you're preparing to go on a long journey on the road these holidays, the safest thing to do is pick up the TAC Driving Preparations audio CD. On the CD, you'll find some classics like The Cradle Lullaby, Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, and who could forget, Rockabye Baby. And if you're not sleeping like a baby, don't worry, because we've thrown in the best of Snooker commentary double disc set.
The best way to avoid fatigue on a long journey is to get a good night's sleep before it. Fatigue kills.
At Floor World, we are the specialists in timber and laminate flooring. With timber flooring from our own Kayuna range to Australia's favourite, Ready Floor. With the European elegance of Quickstep UniClick to our exclusive Vitality laminate flooring. We've got the timber and laminate selection to match any room. If you're building or renovating, it won't cost you the earth.
World!
Floor World. We bring our world to your feet. And ask us now about interest-free finance.
Sponsoring Southern FM.
88.3 Southern FM. It's groovy.
Welcome back to Southern FM. My name is Andrew Jobling. This is the groovy high performance show. I'm sitting here in the studio with the groovy Yair Kilner. It is currently just about 20 minutes past one on Saturday, the 31st of October. Can you believe, Yair, there's another month gone, bit in the dust. Another month gone, another month of our life just passes by. What did you do with the last month is the question I need to ask you if you're listening. Did you make the most of it? Did you move forward in your life? Did you move closer to the things that you want to achieve? Or just let it go past you and go, ah, well, there goes another one. We're sitting here in the studio with a very, very motivational, inspirational man. His name is Yair Kilner. I'm just going to read this article from the Sunday magazine from the Herald Sun back on the 17th of May. And we're talking about Yair, who took part in a bike race. And I'm looking at a photo of this bike. Yair, how much did that bike weigh?
I'm actually not sure, Andrew. It was fairly heavy.
Because you've got everything on it.
You had to have all your survival gear, and basically you had to carry everything you needed for the race with you. So it would have been something that I would have found difficult to lift.
So, like, just standing there trying to lift it on your own would have been tough work, yeah? Okay, so it says the title of this article is Northern Exposure, and the subtitle is Lost in the Snowy Wilds of Alaska, Adventurer Yair Kilner Found an Inner Strength for Survival. And it's interesting, the inner strength, I mean, we all have an inner strength, all of us, and we can pull that out really whenever we need it. If we just need to believe that we've got it, yeah? And I think that's one thing you certainly have is a belief that you can pull it out when you need it. The first paragraph says, stripping naked may seem like an odd choice given the circumstances, but lost in the Alaskan wilderness, soaking wet and shivering violently in temperatures 10 degrees below zero, Yair Kilner knew it was his only chance of survival. So getting your gear off, mate, doesn't sound like necessarily that smart thing to do from where I'm sitting, but you're here to tell the tale, so you obviously did something right. So, mate, do you want to just let's go back to the beginning a little bit and just tell us a bit about the race and what was involved, and then the circumstances which found you in a breaking through the ice in a freezing creek, wasn't it? It was a little creek that you were...
Well, I went through the ice.
You went through the ice?
Into the creek. So the creek was under the ice.
Yeah.
I mean, just a bit of background about the race itself. The race follows the Iditarod Trail, which is a historical trail in Alaska, originally used for basically dog sledding. It has a fairly long history, which we won't get into now, but the last few years, they started... a race that parallels the famous Iditarod dog sledding race, which happens the first week of March, or starts on the first week of March. And that's designed for, you know, a bunch of people who like to suffer. It's limited to 50 people, and we start a week before the dog sled race starts. I suppose partly it's designed so if you die along the way, the dog can come and eat you, and then you're fully environmentally correct.
That's right.
And you're recycling
yourself.
No remains
left.
Basically, it's considered the toughest self-powered endurance race in the world. I don't know much about those titles and if they mean anything, but it's a reasonably serious challenge. And there's basically 50 of us started one afternoon on a glacier in a place called Nick, which is just a bit further north out of Anchorage, and you start and you go as you like. It's a 24/7 race, and it basically, there's two main groups in it: people who are professional athletes who just do a lot of endurance racing, and a bunch of old codgers like me and some other psychos who just enjoy being outdoor and challenging themselves. And about 3 days into the race, I had some mechanical problems with the bike and I was a little bit sick, so I just took a bit of a rest, and the weather changed, deteriorated, and I consequently basically took a side trail, which didn't appear to me at the time a side trail, but I ended up down on a river system. Now, the race itself is on rivers and frozen lakes, so that wasn't unusual and all that, but the way I went was slightly off course, and part of what happened was that I actually, while I was searching to get back onto the trail, I went through the ice and basically went into the water. So, and that was very unscheduled.
And not very pleasant either, I would imagine. How deep was that water that you were in?
Probably chest high.
Chest high?
Where I was.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't very deep.
Well, that's deep enough. Deep enough, mate. And you say here, and I'm quoting here, he says, and this is when you're in the water, I started my own countdown while I tried to figure out what to do. I realised that beyond a certain point, I'd be dead.
Mm-hmm.
What was that point? How much time, once you're in that water, what was the temperature of the water? B, how much time did you have before it was too late?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't sort of starting measurements while I was going down, but I suppose it would have been just near freezing. I mean, the thing is, the water is basically underneath the ice, so there is some, you know, insulation by the ice itself. Outside, it would have been probably minus 20, minus 30 degrees. When I went into the water, it was...
It's warm, like a spa,
yeah,
really.
It felt really warm, yeah. Like, I mean, I regretted not doing it earlier.
A few bubbles and a bit of loofah, and you would have been right.
Yeah. The problem is that when you get into very cold water, your muscles seize very quickly. So I figured out, because it wasn't the first time I fell through ice in expeditions, that I had about between 50 and 90 seconds before my muscles will seize, and then there's nothing you can do anymore, so you're just about to go.
Okay, so 50 to 90 seconds, mm-hmm. And not only did you have to get yourself out of the water, but there's no point getting yourself out of the water without your bike, because your bike was in there too, wasn't it? And that had all your dry supplies on it. So
well,
no point being out there without
some of them
it.
Were dry, a lot of them were no longer dry, but it had my survival gear on it, yeah, and obviously the big problem was that it wasn't so much that I was in the water, but the water was moving very fast. And as the ice was collapsing around me, basically how to get out was becoming more difficult because you haven't got anything to hang on to. So the water tries to grab you and drag you underneath the ice that's remaining.
Yeah.
So it was interesting and
interesting.
Exciting.
And like we already identified that your bike was really heavy,
mm-hmm.
and it was submerged in, so we're saying about a meter and a half of water. So, mate, tell me, how did you get you lift the bike out and then get yourself out within 50 to 90 seconds?
I suppose it's not something that you can actually make a big decision about. You just have a go at it. And, you know, you're obviously in situation where extreme adrenaline rush, you just have a lot of strength that you're not aware of under normal circumstances. And I just realized that that was my only chance. So I thought I might as well go for it. And I just actually went under, lifted the bike and threw it as far as I could and hoping it will catch on something, and lucky for me it did. And once I knew the bike was out with my gear, I could just swim for it.
Yep.
And I was very motivated by then because I was getting very cold.
I'm sure you were. And then you got out and the first thing you did was take your clothes off.
Yes.
Okay, so we're all sitting here thinking, well, why the hell would you do that?
Well, the thing is that, of course, the water is just near freezing, but outside it's minus 20, minus 30, and within less than a minute, all your clothing and everything that's wet in you will freeze. And as it freezes, it constricts your blood circulation, and eventually, you know, if you don't die from drowning, you'll probably die from lack of circulation, frostbites, and you're just not in a good situation. And as the longer you wait, the more difficult it is to actually find, you know, the buttons and laces or whatever you want to take your clothes off with, and it gets caked in ice,
yeah,
and it becomes basically like a piece of steel. A friend of mine who fell through the ice told me that it took them 2 minutes, you know, and they couldn't even find their, you know, the zippers and buttons anymore. Somebody actually had to beat them to loosen the ice. So it's critical to do it very quickly. And it actually makes perfect sense to strip.
It does. When you think about it, it does. Mm. But here's the thing. Under those circumstances, in that situation of extreme adversity, you know, sometimes making the right decision is not the easiest thing to do, is it? So, I mean, you were able to take yourself above the situation, weren't you, and look down at it and say, okay, so what's the best thing for my survival here? What should I do?
Well, I suppose one of the things about it is that in life in generally we always tend to think how complicated things are, but in survival situation you actually recognize that you need to strip things down to very simple steps. And if you actually do one step at a time, and I know we talk about motivation in other situations, it's one step at a time, then even big problems become actually relatively simple. So I just basically realized that I had to take certain steps, and the first one was to actually strip. So it's actually, it's logical once you think about it, but you're not in the context of logical
exactly
thinking.
Right.
You're panicking.
Yeah, there's panic happening there. And in life, I mean, we panic about certainly things that nowhere near as life-threatening as that, and we make wrong decisions, don't we? So it really, I mean, what we're going to do right now, because we're just going to stop here, we are going to come back and talk more about this because it is absolutely enthralling stuff, and I'm sure everyone's just glued to the speakers right now. Just make sure if you're driving, you're still watching the road. But we're talking about really, I guess, what the lesson for today is about overcoming adversity and obstacles and stuff like that. So as listeners know, we have a top five every week, and this week our top five is top five ways to overcome adversity. Surprise, surprise. Now I'm going to give this top five, and then I'm sure Yair will make some comments or certainly add some of his perspective. But let's quickly go through. This is my top five ways to overcome adversity. And number one is to stay focused on where you want to go.
Absolutely. I think, you know, you need to be very clear about what it is that you're trying to achieve. And especially in situations of adversity, not to lose sight of actually the actual destination.
And we're going to talk obviously more about that for you when, like, because I'm sure people are going, well, he's got his gear off now. What's he done? Just wait on. You'll find out. Number two is look for the lesson. Look for the when there's adversity, there's always a lesson there. So look for the lesson.
Yep.
And if you can learn from it, it can also help you come up with step number three, which is find a solution or be solution-oriented rather than go into, which most people go into blame mode or victim mode. Look for a solution because there is always a solution. Now, we're going to talk about this too. I've put number four as find a friend. Now, if it wasn't for friends that you made over there, again, you probably wouldn't be here today.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. I mean, ultimately, it was a combination of, you know, my own skills, I suppose, and determination, and then I suppose a lot of luck of people who kind of like me and tolerate me to come and decide they're going to come and help.
And they put a lot on the line to help you too,
absolutely,
didn't they? So,
absolutely.
I mean, that's incredible. Number five is make a decision that you will overcome, because a lot of people will be confronted by adversity and then just go, oh, well, it's got me. Whether it's an illness or whether it's marriage issues or whatever, they often just let the adversity take over rather than making a decision. This will not stop me. I will find a way out.
I suppose there's a couple of points to raise here, Andrew.
Great.
The first one is that most people are terrified of failure.
Correct.
And in fact, I believe that failure is not falling down but staying down.
Yes, very insightful.
So, you know, you actually learn a lot more from your failures, and including discovering, like say with a bike or other things, that you're a lot stronger than you perceive yourself to be, because normally we reflect what other people suggest to us that we are. But in fact, in those situations, that's another, the other point is that you actually can't rely on anybody else. You're just there. It's between you and you. And therefore, you know, there's no point trying to think about blaming anything or, you know, complaining about anything, because you could do that and then you'll be dead. And it's not a very long story then. But if you decide that you're actually going to try and use whatever skills you have and whatever determination you have to get yourself out of a bad situation, and accept the fact that, you know, it's not a success as such. It's not something you planned. It wasn't part of, you know, the way you imagine things. But that's okay, because sometimes those things actually teach you the most.
And it's given you that, you know, that real confidence to know that you can overcome anything. Like, and that's the other thing, you know, we've got to believe in your power, because you did things that, like, logically you'd think, well, I couldn't do that, but you did that because the power was there. You've got the resourcefulness, you've got it there when you need it. So that's pretty cool. Now, okay, so our competition this week is to SMS and tell us about some adversity that you have overcome. Send it just a quick SMS about something that you have overcome, and SMS that to 0414973315. That's 0414973315. Send us an SMS about something that you have overcome, some adversity that you've faced and you have overcome. Fabulous. And while you're doing that, here's Newton Faulkner with Dream Catch Me.
Every time I close my eyes, it's you, and I know now who I am.
This year, Victorian Year 11 students will receive the Street Smart Handbook, a free survival guide to help tackle life's big challenges. The Street Smart Handbook gives teenagers clear, down-to-earth information that helps them make educated and safe choices. The Street Smart Handbook is not afraid to confront issues that teenagers want and need answers to, such as drug abuse, eating disorders, managing money, buying a car, and it's all in the one handbook. Street Smart, an initiative of the Police Citizens Youth Club and Countrywide Media, the official publishers.
Calling all PC users! Calling all PC users! Windows 70s in store now at Harvey Norman. Get in quick for these incredible introductory offers. Buy any Windows 7 laptop or desktop and get a bonus copy of Microsoft Office Home and Student. Or Windows 7 Home Premium Upgrade is available for just $188 with bonus TV tuner. Plus 700 days interest free. No deposit, no interest, no repayments till September 2011.
Minimum finance demand $500. Fees, charges, terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
Windows 7 in store now at Harvey Norman.
Sponsoring Southern FM.
88.3 Southern FM. Sounds funky.
This is the Funky Southern FM. My name's Andrew Jobling. This is the High Performance Show at 20 minutes to 2 on Saturday, October 31. Ah, what a wonderful day. And what a wonderful guest we have in the studio. Thanks, Andrew. Mr. Yair Kellner. I've had trouble pronouncing it. Do I get it right?
Close enough.
Tell us the actual pronunciation.
It's of your ear.
Your ear.
Mm-hmm.
Your ear. Okay, I apologise.
Your ear.
Thank you. I'm forgiven.
Let's move on.
We are talking with Yair Kellner about his incredible experience lost in Alaska, fallen through the ice, sub-zero degrees, getting out of a creek, throwing out his bike, and then getting all his gear off because it was cold in the water, but it was absolutely sub-zero degrees outside. So with saturated clothes, mate, if you didn't get them off quickly, they would be frozen solid, mm-hmm. wouldn't they?
That's
and
right.
You would be a goner. Okay, so now I've got another quote from this article, a quote from you, and it says quite clearly, "There are lessons from my experience. It shows that it's not what happens to you, but what you do with it that's important."
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's an incredibly profound statement that that I think, you know, a lot of us often, you know, it is that whole victim thing. Oh, it's not fair. Why is this happening to you? Why is it happening to me? And we often either spit the dummy or we get angry or whatever, and we only make the situation worse, right? You know, mm-hmm. if you're in Absolutely. That situation and you're freezing, you go, it's not fair, and before you know it, you're dead. So it's not about what happens, because you can't choose the situation, but you can always choose how you respond to that situation.
Absolutely.
So we're going to talk a little bit more about this, because you now have got your gear off.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do next?
I basically decided that the only way I'm going to pull through will be to actually get the gear dry, but you probably don't have to go to remote areas to realize that it's very hard to light snow. Yes. In fact, it doesn't burn very well. The only other source of heat you have, aside from a little stove which I had with me, was my own body heat. And as your body reacts by shivering, you're in fact generating quite a lot of heat. So what I actually did was get my sleeping bag out, which was in a waterproof bag, which meant it wasn't saturated or soaking wet. Got into it naked and then just put one piece of clothing at a time back on. Not the most pleasant experience you can have, but it certainly helped by actually drying it through shivering. Took a few hours for each piece of clothing. And
well, it's not like you had anywhere to go.
I wasn't in a hurry to go anywhere, actually. I was contemplating getting back on the trail, but I realized that, you know, as the weather was deteriorating and as kind of the day wore on, that it's going to be a while before I'll be able to get back on. And obviously with no clothing, I realized it's going to just be a bit longer than I anticipated.
Okay, so you're in your sleeping bag, you're trying to warm your clothes up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously you need to eat, and I also understand from your story that you'd given a vast majority of your food away to someone else just
yep.
earlier that day
mm-hmm.
because you thought you would be at a checkpoint where there would be food for you.
Well, no, actually the what really happened was that person, a friend of mine, Howard, was getting very sick, and we suspected he had some food poisoning, which meant that his food was contaminated. And I found him actually in the middle of a frozen lake, puking his guts out, and couldn't hold anything. And he's been trying to eat for a while. And I therefore suggested to him that since we're going to be at our own checkpoints in, you know, probably 6-7 hours from where we were, he could take some of my food. Now, he didn't want to do it, being a smart man, and I assured him that I had plenty. I lied.
You lied.
It was important for me that he ate. Just a quick point
about
the checkpoints. Well, what we do is we actually send food supplies ahead, which are dropped by an airplane. into different spots, and then we just pick it up as we go along. So I assumed that if I was continuing, I would be in a checkpoint within, say, 7 to 8 hours. And I just felt that it was important that, you know, he ate. So I've given him the food. I sort of told him a bit of a fib that I had plenty, and, you know, because he wasn't really in the condition to argue, he just took it and promised to kill me a few days later when he discovered that I was lying.
He almost didn't have to kill you. Can I ask you a question? Knowing what you now know, would you have made that same decision?
Absolutely.
You would have? You would have given away your food and risked your own life?
Well, I left some, you know. I mean, basically, you
what
can't
you
predict.
Left?
I had a few slices of cheese and a couple of energy bars.
Right.
Yeah.
And how long did that have to last you?
Well, it turned out it had to last me about almost 4.5 days, but originally it only had to be for a few hours.
So you would have made that same decision?
Probably.
Okay. Interesting. You're a very giving person, very selfless person. Okay, so now this is really interesting because I know we've spoken about this. So you're in your sleeping bag.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to, you know, you've got, the weather's is pretty bad. Pretty bad. It's probably the understatement of the year. It's not like there was a bit of wind around. You had very little food. You knew you were going to be there a while, didn't you? Because you knew the weather was bad, so it was going to take a while before people realised you were missing. And then when they realised you were missing, it was going to take a little while for them to actually find you. So how long did you estimate that you had really before someone, that you had to survive before someone would find you?
To answer that, you really need to understand the environment. It's not that it's like perfect weather and everything is going under control. There was a storm brewing. I was also in a canyon, which means, and I was off trail, so that means all those kind of items or, you know, things together meant that it would be very difficult to find me, because they wouldn't look for me off trail. They would probably, if they came to look for me, they'd be on trail, and they wouldn't come looking for me for a while, because the people who entered this race, you need to kind of present your credentials, and I don't mean your ability to get lost and get off track, but basically a lot of expeditions and other stuff you've done before. It's called the Iditarod Trail Invitational because you are invited to the race, and you're invited if they believe that you can survive it. So therefore, they're not, the people who organize it and people who kind of, you know, keep an eye on things are not people who panic after, you know, if you're missing for 12 hours or something. They would know that, you know, things can go wrong, or, you know, you can be delayed by storms or conditions, bad ice. A lot of people fall through the ice. I'm not the only one who fell through it, you know, so I'm just the one who kind of managed to do it, I suppose, A, more famously, but B, more intelligently, you know, rescue myself to a great extent.
Yeah.
But I estimated that if the weather was good, it'll take a couple of days. The weather was bad, so there was no chance that they were going to come looking for me, A, because they couldn't see anything. It was just big storm brewing. You're already in a white landscape, and then there's snow and ice flying everywhere. So you're sitting in a, you know, million liters of milk, and then somebody's coming from the outside looking for you. You're not very visible.
Yeah.
So I knew it's going to be a while. The problem, well, the challenge was to get out of the canyon first. And the problem was that it was a big ice slope. And I had a big, heavy bike, and I was not really in a very good condition. So
how long? But you spent how many days just in that canyon in your sleeping bag?
I spent a day and a half in the canyon itself.
Yep.
Then I extracted myself out of it by a combination of modifying the bike a little bit, and I basically realized that I couldn't climb. I tried to climb the slope out of the canyon, and I kept sliding back. So that was a good exercise in frustration and, you know, complete futile waste of time. So I eventually realized that what I could use was the serrated pedals of the bike. So I took them off and used them as crampons, which are like
clever
serrated fangs that you can attach to your feet. And I spent beautiful 5 hours climbing 500 meters, which was one of my slowest speed records.
But it doesn't matter, does it? And when we come back to some of those points, number one being keeping focused on where you want to be, which you did. You focused very clearly on survival and getting to the top. and also being solution oriented, you know, like
absolutely.
And again, not thinking about, oh, poor little old me, but going, okay, well, what do? How do I get out of this? What's the next step for me? And the other thing, you know, four and a half days, like, I think most people would have gone crazy. So how did you keep yourself sane? How did you keep yourself focused? How did you keep yourself thinking positive and not thinking about dying in ridiculous conditions?
I suppose, Andrew, that the main point is always to remember what you have, not what you don't have. So you can have a good attitude, you can have a belief system. I mean, different people have different things. I had three slices of cheese, and that kept me very busy trying to think how I'm going to divide it over a number of days. And it's amazing how many ways you can cut three slices of cheese. I had two energy bars, and I had some coffee with me. So I basically occupied myself, first of all, with that. Then I occupied myself by trying to remember words for songs.
Yep.
Because the thing is, you have to kind of try and keep an eye somehow if you're not getting too hypothermic, because you're not eating enough, so you're not generating enough body heat. You're pretty frozen as it is. You're tired. You're hungry. You're getting pretty weak. And, you know, the clock's ticking. And there's a storm. So things were getting quite interesting.
They were. And we're going to come back and get the final bit of this story shortly. But just a reminder, we have a competition running. The competition is to send an SMS and tell us about an obstacle or an adversity that you have overcome, and send that SMS to 0414973315. 0414973315. And we will be back shortly with more from Your Ear. And this is one of Your Ear's choices, this song, so don't blame me. This is Chet Atkins. I wonder if anyone who's listening has heard of Chet Atkins, Your Ear, do you think?
Probably not.
It's called The Barbershop Rag.
As a Vinnie's volunteer, we help many people who are trapped by their circumstances.
Facing a future with little choice or hope, They fear they have nowhere to turn.
Every day, over 5,000 Australians turn to Vinnies for help.
Vinnies Winter Appeal brings much-needed warmth into many lives, adding comfort and hope. Please donate online at vinnies.org.au or call 13 18 12. That's 13 18 12.
The Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
It is Southern FM, Andrew Nicholas Joblin coming at you live from 22 Balcombe Road. It is currently 1:54 p.m. on Saturday, October 31, and we're coming at you from 88.3 on the FM dial. That's Southern FM. I hope you're listening. I hope you're having a fabulous time enjoying the lessons and journey of this inspirational man, Yair Kellner, who has telling us all about his amazing story of survival. But along the way, it's really the lessons that we're taking from this, because we're not certainly suggesting that anyone do what Yair has done. Like, he's probably not recommending this Iditarod Invitational to many people.
Don't do this at home.
Don't do it. Do not try this at home. But what we're wanting to do is give you lessons, and the lessons are very, very simple. You know, every day you will be faced with some sort of adversity or challenge, and it's how you react and your attitude towards that will determine where you end up in your life. Isn't
sure,
that true?
Absolutely.
So you, just to finish off this story, mate, because it's a bloody good one.
Okay, well, last time we were just getting out of the canyon in the last episode, and I eventually, as I said, break a new slowness record. Took 5 hours to get out of that canyon wall, which was just about 500 meters. I mean, that in itself was interesting, just because you really have to persevere and believe you can make
it. And you feel like you're going nowhere.
I was definitely going nowhere, because for every, you know, two steps up, I was sliding back down, and I had a very heavy bike. And so, anyhow, it took quite some time, but I eventually got it back into the plateau, and the storm was still going. So I dug a snow cave, because I realized, you know, I'm just going to get into further and further trouble just trying to basically push myself and the bike through very heavy snow. It's a bit like if you try and run through, you know, deep water when you go down to the beach. It's not a lot of success involved in that.
Yeah.
So I dug a snow cave, and then I basically realized that, you know, I would probably have to sit out the storm, because even if they realized I was missing by now, which I assume they did, they're not going to come and do anything, because they just couldn't leave their own shelters, and that would have endangered themselves even more.
Yeah.
Couple of days later, basically, I have a barometer in my watch. It's a navigation watch. Absolutely. And I realized that the air pressure was changing, and that told me that good weather is coming, or that the storm is going to abate. And I knew that that would be the first opportunity, that if anybody was going to come looking for me, they would. So I then started to make some marks in the snow using Gatorade and, you know, some of my survival gear, so it could draw attention, because it is seriously white landscape, and
it's very
difficult. You'd think you'd be able to see something, but it's hundreds and hundreds of kilometers, and it's just big empty.
Yep.
And then I could hear some airplanes, you know, once the storm is...
Yay.
And I kind of jumped out of the cave, because I realized they're not going to be able to see me in that. And there were a lot of airplanes of just people who are traveling, you know, to see the Alaskan mountains, and they were too far away. And then progressively I could hear, you know, an airplane coming more in my direction. So I jumped up and down again and started waving things, but it didn't appear as if it was actually coming towards me. So I basically turned and was just about to get back into the cave when I could hear the pitch of the engine change, and I realized that the airplane was banking. And as soon as I heard that, I realized that they're probably now going to head in my direction. And so I just started waving, jumping up and down, and, you know, you do whatever you can to sort of draw attention. And in fact, they flew over me.
Great.
And I realized then that they were probably looking for me.
Yeah.
And then the door of the airplane, it was just a light aircraft, the door of the airplane opened, and somebody was throwing something out, and I realized then that they were throwing something to tell me.